The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 21st, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Great show on tap for you today as we continue to get closer and closer and closer to the start of high school football, college football, and Auburn University football. That's right, so much to go over on this Wednesday edition of On the Line. We've got some storylines around college football that we need to talk about. Also news out of the NFL about 30 minutes ago that relates to the Auburn of the past. We'll talk about that today. Plus, it's Wednesday, which means Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will be with us. We'll get caught up on everything around Georgia athletics. That includes fall camp wrapping up for football, how they are treating this week before an official game week with one of the biggest game ones or week one matchups in college football, Georgia and Clemson. Plus, we get to talk to Jordan today about a little Georgia basketball with the SEC schedules being released yesterday. Excited to get his thoughts on all of that. And for those of you that are regulars around here, it's Wednesday, which means it's Double D Wednesday. That's right. Daryl Dapprich will be with us coming up in hour number two. We'll get his thoughts, takes, opinions, comments, whatever you want to call it. We'll talk to him about Auburn football, Auburn basketball, Auburn recruiting in both sports. There are updates there on both sides. And so should be a great 30 minutes with Daryl coming up in hour number two. Until those two guests, though, in between and around them, you can be a part of the show. You can give me a call at 334-321-1390. That is the number to get you through to me. Call in, be a part of the show, be on the line. I want to hear from you. You can also, if you got a quick hitter, a quick question, comment, or anything like that, you can always text me in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We are 10 days away, ladies and gentlemen, 10 days away from the start of Auburn University football. Next Saturday is the day. It's week zero of college football right now. High school gets going in 2 days, tomorrow and then Friday. It's pretty crazy to think about everything getting underway. And I want to start the show today with something that's been in the news the last couple of days, but we just haven't had a chance to get to it here on this show in particular. Have you seen the comments from Mike Gundy, the head coach at Oklahoma State for football? And I know what you're thinking. Oh, which ones, right? Which comments? This guy seems to always find his way into the headlines, what, every 3 or 4 months? It seems like he is getting in trouble himself with the law or having players in trouble or making outlandish comments or going after a reporter or something in that regard, right? This guy's always in the news. And this time, Mike Gundy, the head coach of Oklahoma State football, has some quotes about NIL, things that he addressed with his team and his program now that we are into the back end of August and the football season is upon us. And there have been many people in the media who have already gone after this guy and have already slammed him for his comments, and yes, I'm next in line. But I also can see both sides. And if you listen to this show, and if you've listened to me for quite some time, been doing this, I mean, coming up on 3 years at the turn of the calendar, you know that I'm pride myself on seeing both sides of most situations. Because there's always two sides to every story, if not more, right? There's never just one side, one answer, clear cut and dry. some more than others, but there are typically multiple viewpoints. And so buckle up, because that's what we're going to do in this conversation here. The quotes that got everybody fired up, and this was from a couple of days ago, so I do apologize for bringing it back up, I guess. But the quotes that got people fired up were from Mike Gundy, who says, quote, "I told the players there's no negotiating now," talking about NIL. He says, quote, "Portal's over. All negotiations are history. Now we're playing football, just coaching and playing football." Think about that. He goes on to say, quote, "The business side of what we do now is we have to have those conversations with them." He says, quote, "Tell your agent to quit calling us and asking for more money. It's non-negotiable now. Start again in December." There's a lot to break down there. There's a lot to dissect with those quotes from a Power Four head football coach. This is not the head coach at Charlotte. This isn't the head coach at BYU before they were a big Power Four school. I mean, this is Oklahoma State football, a program that prides itself on history and recognition and competitiveness, I would say. I'm not going to say success, but I'll say competitiveness. They've been top five in their conference typically, but breaking through just hasn't been their thing. But in this new era, right, of transfer portal, NIL, and just college athletics as a whole, it's no secret that the older generation coaches, the long-term coaches in college athletics, they don't like this new era. Not only do they not like it, they hate it. They can't stand it. They can't stand to see change in college athletics, because there are now things that are out of their control. It's the Nick Saban mindset, right? Of, you know what? This is something that I can't control. I can't be better than everybody at this all the time. I'm out. I'm done. I'm hanging it up. And you've seen that in college football, college basketball, college baseball even. You've seen it across the college athletics landscape. And Mike Gundy, while he may still be an active head coach, it's acts and comments like this that tell us everything we need to know, that tell us he's fed up, he's annoyed, he's aggravated, he's tired, he doesn't want to do this anymore in this new era, which is going to separate the legends of the game. Mike Gundy's a legend in college football. He will go down as one of the most impactful coaches, maybe not so much on the field, but some of this type of stuff right here in this era that he's been in. And so you continue to see him in the headlines like this, and this has taken it to another level. He has now joined the party in the older school coaches and showing their discomfort and their not agreeance with NIL and transfer portal. Tell your agent to quit calling us and asking for more money. It's non-negotiable now. Start again in December. Wow. And to do that, to tell your players, we're done. You basically reminded them who's boss is what you did, right? You shut it down and said, nope, no more. We're good. Quit asking, right? It's the famous Nick Saban quote in the post-game presser. I'm not going to, so quit asking, right? That's what Mike Gundy just told his entire team. And this was in the public eye. How do you think he's been saying this to them in their meetings? Sounds like to me, he just got tired of hearing it. And Paul Feinbaum actually had a really good point about this the other day in saying, look, you're already a program that struggles to get the best recruits in your own state, in your own area, in your own region, your own conference. Saying things like this is not the way to turn that around. And I agree with Paul 100%. He's absolutely right. Oklahoma State, even with a new Big 12 conference. Are they the top dog in the Big 12? Would you put Oklahoma State as the premier program in college football from the Big 12? I wouldn't. No way. And so for them to try to get back to the top, telling players and telling recruits, because that's what this is doing now. Let's remember this. He's telling recruits, we don't want to deal with that. You come here wanting NIL money and then wanting more NIL money? Don't come here. Don't expect that from here because we're not going to entertain it. I don't want to deal with it. It's so crazy to me how coaches are just, what's the best way to put this? They're refusing to change. And whether you like it or not, when something like this happens in college football, NIL, transfer portal, rule change, whatever the case may be, you have two options. You have two options. You can adjust and overcome and be better because of it. Or you can complain and you can make quotes like this and you can cry to the media until you get your way or you can get out. We've seen legendary coaches do both. Nick Saban adjusted and adapted and overcame and mastered for so long with things until something came around that he couldn't. And for Mike Gundy, sounds like he's trying to do what all the other coaches are doing, is just complain about it until it goes away. I got news for you. It ain't going away. And so the quote was wild. The things that he said, the comments were out of line, I think. And so in response to Mike Gundy saying, we're not paying you anymore, so quit asking. What was Oklahoma State football's response to this? Oh, you know, they just put a QR code on the back of a football helmet so that fans can donate to the NIL collective at Oklahoma State. Are you serious? Really? You're so against paying your own players out of your own pocket from Oklahoma State football, from the school that you represent. You're too afraid to do it yourself, but you're not afraid to ask the fans to do it for you. And there's a difference in alumni donating and having, and I'm not against NIL collectives whatsoever, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not. But to put it on the back of a football helmet, what are we doing? What are we doing? It's a joke. And I had somebody text me just now about it, and I was getting to it, I promise you. You got there with me. QR codes for the collective NIL on the back of their helmets. You can look it up. It's right there. I saw somebody on social media the other day that said, how am I supposed to scan the QR code of a pulling guard? of a pulling offensive tackle. What are you supposed to do? Pause the TV, scan the QR code, zoom in from the nosebleeds of a football stadium? Give me a break, man. It's unbelievable. It just blows my mind how so many of these coaches, and look, I'm sorry to phrase it this way, but I don't know what any other way to describe them, the old school coaches. That's what they are. And look, I don't say that in a negative way, and I hope it doesn't come off that way, but that's what they are. They're the older generation, old school coaches. And that's where you're going to see separation. This next 5 to 10 years, folks, is and we're in the middle of it right now. It's some of the most crucial times in college athletics. Because you'll see coaches who fan out, quit, leave, retire, because they can't or won't adjust. And you'll see coaches that flourish and dominate because they were able to make themselves better and use this stuff to their advantage. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you're going to see separation. And coaches like Mike Gundy, who have been very good for their programs, they just haven't figured it out yet. There's a whole other direction that we could go with this QR code situation. And that's where we're going to go next. And it's something that I talked about weeks ago, months ago, that got some people fired up, that got the purists fired up again. because of where college football is heading, where college athletics are heading. And putting QR codes for people to donate NIL money on the back of your players' helmets when you refuse to pay them yourself, it's step number 50 in the direction that we're heading. And we'll talk about that when we come back after we take our first break here in hour number one. What are your thoughts on all of this? Gundy's comments, QR codes on helmets. I mean, where is this going in your mind? Give me a call, 334-321-1390. We'll continue talking about this coming up next here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And just going over this Mike Gundy story, Oklahoma State, and where college athletics is heading, because this is another milestone. You will look back on this moment 5 and 10 years from now and say, yeah, remember when they put QR codes on the back of their helmets and Mike Gundy cried about paying their players and got tired of the conversation, so he laid down the law and told them to stop? You'll look back on this from years from now, and it'll be pretty wild how this step will be in the entire timeline of this situation. Let's get to the phone lines here on the Wednesday edition of the show, 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with?
Uncle T-Bone, Jacob.
Uncle T-Bone, I smoked you out on a Wednesday.
Any of these coaches who are moaning and gnashing of the teeth about NIL and paying players are quickly on their way out. And it all started with Nick. Remember a couple of years ago, Jacob, when A&M had that ridiculous recruiting class and he was running around every talk show on earth, you know, oh my gosh, A&M bought every player on their roster and they got the number one class in the nation. Wow, we're only number two. And a couple of years out, after that, he's out of college football. It's Kirby Smart's going to be out soon. Mike Gundy, goodbye. Nick, you don't hear Kalen DeBoer complaining about it, do you, Jacob?
No.
He's getting paid $12 million a year. These players can do whatever they want. Embrace the change or get out, old boomers.
Boom. Boom. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right, Uncle T. I really, really do. And it's so wild to think that Kirby Smart could be in that group because he hasn't been a head coach all that long. I mean, it's longer than you think, but he's not a Nick Saban type of coach where he's been, you know, in the game for 30 years as a head coach. Like, it's crazy to think about him being looped into that conversation.
Yeah, that whole talent deficit conversation he had out of the blue the other day, which means he knows his roster is probably not as stacked as it has been in the few years, and he's just pre-warning Georgia fans with that schedule, we're going to have a couple of L's. Still might make the college football playoff, we're going to have a couple of L's. That's what he's doing in that whole – my talent, there's a talent deficit in college football. Man, there's more people playing football than ever. The talent deficit is on your own roster, and you're seeing other people across the sidelines that you used to coach, and you don't like it.
There's no talent deficit. There's talent. There's talent balance. I mean, it's just spread out. It's more evenly stacked on different rosters rather than the same five every year.
Exactly. I mean, the coaches who are, you know, Dabo Swinney, another example, won't be around a lot longer.
I agree with that.
They're building an iron curtain around upstate Clemson, South Carolina. I'm not transfer portaling. Well, guess what, buddy? You're going to get portaled out of college football here sooner or later. That's all I got, Jacob. You have a great one.
Thanks so much, T-Bone. I'll see you on Friday, my friend. 334-321-1390. You know we're doing something right when you get guys like T-Bone on their day off to come on and talk a little college football. And I told you at the beginning of all of this that I pride myself on seeing all the sides of a situation. And I do. I absolutely do. With this, with the Mike Gundy comments, I guarantee it does get tiring and just frustrating to constantly be asking for more. More, more, more. Give me more. Want more money. This isn't good enough. You know what I mean? And for somebody like myself who grew up in a household where you didn't ask for things like that. I'm still to this day, I'm uncomfortable asking for money. It could be a $5 bill. And it gets me to my core to not do that. But not everybody was that way. And I think we can all agree, even somebody like myself, who is a part of the younger generation, like, things have just changed. And so, sure, as a head coach, with so much happening now and so much pressure on you to win and win right now, I guarantee it gets tiring to have the same conversation over and over and over again and asking, give me more, give me more, give me more. This is not enough. I understand it. I totally, totally do. And there are some people who are in power, bosses, of those of you out there who are bosses, that when your employee comes and asks for more money, right, some bosses will, they'll fire you right then and there because they believe they're taking care of you. They believe that they are giving you more than you deserve, and they'll let you go right there. Or they'll question your loyalty, and they'll question why you're asking for it. On the other side, employees, I think, are entitled to be paid what they feel that they deserve and what they earn and what they're worth. That's what we're dealing with here in college football. People, can you see that? This isn't about football anymore. This is a pure business. It's a job. Head coaches are the boss, and the players are the working bees. They work, they put in the time, they get the results, and they want more money. And so, as Uncle T-Bone said, and as a lot of people are saying, either pony up or get out. And that's where head coaches stand nowadays. And, yeah, the Mike Gundys of the world, Dabo Sweeney for sure, those guys are not going to be around much longer in terms of being a head coach in college football. And it is what it is. That era will move on. But what gets me about this whole QR code thing is, think about that for a second. Look at where we are. We have a college football team that's running onto the field, and with about 5 seconds of your time, you can scan their helmet, put your credit card information in or your bank account info in, and send him money. Sure, right now it's to the NIL collective. Okay. How far off are we from that being his personal Venmo account, his personal Cash App? Heck, a direct deposit to his bank accounts. That sounds insane, doesn't it? But we're not that far off. We're not that far away. You want to pay Peyton Thorne $1,000 because he did a good job? Okay, do it. There you go. That day's coming. I got more to say, but looks like we got another phone call. We'll get to that really, really quickly here. 334-321-1390. Got about a minute. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, man, this is Shane.
All right, go for it.
Hey, man, I was just saying, you know, you've seen those cars that are like, there's some kids that just graduated. They put their Venmo or Cash App on the back of their car.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like,
yeah, buy the bride
a
drink, right?
That type
of thing.
Why am I supposed to give you money? Why am I supposed to give you money for you doing what you were supposed to do or what you are doing, you know?
Sure.
I don't know. I feel like it's the new generation, you know, that wants more for less. They want handouts and not. We're going to lose the work ethic. We're going to lose what it means to work hard. And I'm scared for that day, man. But
yeah.
We'll see where it's headed. Where you go, buddy?
Yep. Appreciate the call. I think that's a good point. That's a really good example of, yeah, just graduated. Here's my Venmo. Or as I told him, we're going on a bachelorette trip. Buy the bride a drink. I don't hate on that stuff, but that's where we're heading. It's that era of the human race where, yeah, technology is everything. Money is everything. That's never changed. What's it all about? It's all about the money. And just to think that the day will come where the Cam Colemans of the world make a one-handed grab in a championship game in the SEC championship, and he picks up his phone at halftime, and it's just the bank notifications, and everybody's sending him cash. You laugh now. You laugh right now. But tell me why that can't happen. Tell me why it won't happen. There's been no limitations so far. What's stopping them from taking the next step? All right, we're going to take a break from this conversation because Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is joining us after this. We'll talk to him about Georgia football wrapping up fall camp, any injuries, position battle updates, plus some basketball as well. That's coming up next here on ESPN 106.7.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goetz with you on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. And as we do every Wednesday at this time in hour number one, excited to bring this man back in. He's joined us periodically throughout the summer, but now the football season's back. He is with us on a weekly basis. It's Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, the 24/7 sports site covering all things Georgia athletics. Jordan, hope you're doing well, and we are, what, now 10 days away from the start of Georgia football.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that the offseason's almost over. It's going to be fun getting a small dose of college football this upcoming Saturday, a couple of decent matchups, but yeah, less than 2 weeks to go till Georgia's back on the field. Super excited to get this season underway.
Well, fall camp has wrapped up pretty much around the conference and around the country, including for Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. And so the best way that you can, Jordan, can you kind of summarize what happened throughout fall camp, whether that be major storylines? We'll get some injury updates from you in just a second. But just to kind of summarize what fall camp was for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that Kirby saw the progress and the growth that he wanted to in this team, particularly going from the first scrimmage to the second scrimmage, which the second one was held this past Saturday. Kirby had a lot of good things to say after the fact. Said he really liked the physicality of this team. Maybe more importantly, that he liked how they grinded through tough situations, how they handled and responded to adversity. You know, Georgia does have some veterans back on both sides of the ball, but off, you know, plenty of talent, some big names off of the 2023 team. So I think that's definitely an area, just when you look at the entire team, that Georgia is excited about. And then to talk about some of the things that, you know, looking at certain positions, I think the running back sort of stole the show. You know, I think that, you know, everyone knew what Trevor Etienne, adding him from Florida, what that meant, and understanding that he was probably going to be that lead back. But some of the backs behind him did a really good job of showing that they're up for the challenge. Branson Robinson, a guy coming back from injury, looked really good. Roderick Robinson, who's been a little banged up, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but he's looked good as well. And then probably the guy that's gotten the most buzz just in general was Nate Frazier, a true freshman from California, had another good scrimmage on Saturday, had about a 40-yard rushing touchdown. People are super excited about him. And you know, looking on the other side of the ball, I think the question remains what has been a question throughout this offseason is this defensive line. They've been beat up. Jordan Hall still coming back from injury. Warren Brinson slowly but surely making his way back. They've gotten good results and seen good things from guys like Christian Miller, which I think helps alleviate some of the stress, but it continues to be an area that I'm super interested in watching. I've seen how this defensive line plays, especially in week one against Clemson.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the running back room one that you had specifically talked about had talent in there, but maybe there were question marks, and so now they seem to impress in fall camp, huh?
Definitely. They knew that they were going to have to rely on at least one of these three true freshmen that they added this offseason, but you know, you can't bank on that. And Nate Frazier's done a good job of sort of answering that question. You know, he's had a really good fall camp. And, yeah, I mean, to get him going, to get Branson Robinson back, you know, there was a lot of people who thought they were going to have to kind of ease him into the season. You know, maybe he's not even really an option until October. Based on everything I've heard and what we've seen, I think Branson's going to be available for that Clemson game. And, you know, we still don't have a straight answer on if Trevor Etienne is going to be suspended based on when he was arrested in the spring. So we could be talking about Branson Robinson being the starting running back, which will be an incredible achievement for him. I think even if he doesn't start, he'll have a role against Clemson. And I think that's super exciting for him coming off a really tough injury last fall camp.
for you personally, and this can be off of what you've seen, what you've been told, what Kirby Smart has said, is there a particular position in mind that you think got better more than other positions on the team? And what I mean by that is, who progressed the most in a certain position on this Georgia football team from either the spring or the start of fall camp? What position would that be and why?
Well, I would definitely point to running back as an area that showed improvement, but another one I would point to staying on offense is wide receiver. You know, there were some legitimate questions after Ra-Ra Thomas was dismissed, and I think that a lot of those guys answered the call, and not only by guys coming out and making plays, but I've heard a lot of good things about this group's versatility, you know, that they are able to play the different wide receiver positions between the X, the Y, and the Z. So not only does Georgia feel good about having a pretty deep rotation of guys that can play, probably 6-7 different receivers they feel pretty good about putting out there and expecting them to make plays. But there's enough versatility that they can move those guys around. And not only is that good because you can maximize which receivers you put out there, but it's going to keep defenses on their toes. You know, they may not know necessarily what they're going to be lining up against when the offense goes out there. So, yeah, again, I'd say the running backs deserve a ton of credit. I think strides were made there, but I would not sleep on those receivers. I think they did a good job of answering the call and showing that they're ready to have a big year.
And with those receivers, they're going to have a dude back there at quarterback who is very, very experienced and one of the best in the entire country in Carson Beck. 24/7 Sports did their national QB rankings, and Carson Beck was at third in the country ahead of Jackson Dart, but behind Cam Ward down at Miami and Quinn Ewers at Texas. Do you agree that Carson Beck is a top three quarterback in the country going into this year?
I think he's got a really strong case to be number one, to be honest with you. And I think the one thing that, you know, if we broke down how the rankings were made and maybe what led to him not being number one has been his deep ball. It's not something that he's really done well. It's something that, has been a work in progress. But based on what we've heard in fall camp, he's made strides. Mike Bobo told us a couple weeks ago that he felt like he had improved in that area. So, I like Cam Ward a decent bit. I think I'd put Carson Beck above him. And then Quinn Ewers, I think Carson's got a stronger case there. So, you know, obviously gonna champion my 24/7 Sports brethren. And hey, everybody go read that story. But I think I'd take Carson Beck over both of those QBs.
I think it comes down to experience, Jordan. I really, really do. I think it comes down for Carson Beck just having the experience, having the knowledge, the IQ, and having the resume as well with some of those guys. I mean, you also have Shedeur Sanders up there from Colorado, Connor Wegman in there from A&M. I mean, there's a little bit of fluctuation there, but I'm with you. I think Carson Beck is one of, if not the best quarterback in the country going into the 2024 season. We're talking of a Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He joins us every Wednesday here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Asked you about, or I guess alluded to, the injury question, and so I'll get to that now. Any more injury updates that we need to know about in terms of the Georgia Bulldogs in preparation for Clemson in Game 1 next Saturday?
Well, I'd say the one we're paying the most attention to at this point is Roderick Robinson, one of those running backs. Kirby said on Tuesday that he's dealing with a little bit of a turf toe injury. Obviously, that's a really tough injury, especially for a running back. Don't have clarity yet on if he'll be available. I think that will be very tough, and that'd be a significant blow, especially, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, if Trevor Etienne were not able to go. I mean, Georgia's probably looking at Branson Robinson coming off an injury, and then Nate Frazier, a true freshman, and then probably Cass Jones, who's a veteran walk-on. So that would be a significant blow if Roderick can't play. Good news on Warren Brinson, a guy who's working back from an Achilles injury. Sounds like he has stepped up his reps at practice. That started with Tuesday. He's a defensive tackle. Guy that started three games last year. I think he's going to play quite a bit in this Clemson game. And then otherwise, I think they're in decent shape. Colby Young, a receiver they got from Miami, he's been dealing with a hamstring injury. I don't think it's significant, but I think Georgia's trying to be smart about his usage. I don't put him in a bad spot and, you know, hopefully have him available for that Clemson game. So, yeah, definitely Roderick Robinson is going to be the one to watch. And again, if he's not able to go, that is a pretty significant blow for Georgia going into the season opener.
One thing we know, though, that Georgia still has on their side more than most programs do in college football is the depth factor, right? I mean, even if somebody goes down, you don't want to see that, and you never wish that upon anybody, but Georgia still has some of the best depth at every position around college football.
Definitely, and it's something that, you know, when fans get worried or people start talking about it, it's still a first-world problem for Georgia. They may not have the depth that Kirby Smart wants, but I don't know if it's possible for Kirby to hit that mark. You know, he wants as much as he can have at every position. They're still in pretty good shape, and, you know, knock on wood for Georgia's sake, they're not looking at any situations through fall camp where they've lost guys for the year or even injuries that are expected to really carry deep into the fall. And there are a lot of programs who cannot say that going in to August and leading up to September.
There's been an interesting storyline here in Auburn about what Hugh Freeze said last Friday at his weekly press conference that'll be moving to Mondays during the season. But he's had it on Fridays during fall camp, and there was a question to him about what this current week that we're in right now, Jordan, what would this week look like for Auburn before you get into game week? And Hugh Freeze talked about them treating it as a normal game week. They've gone through normal practices and normal timelines and preparing for a game on Saturday night. Have you heard anything about what Georgia is doing in this kind of in-between, kind of a bridge week between the end of fall camp and week one versus Clemson?
Yeah, when we talked to Kirby on Tuesday, they had taken Sunday and Monday to just kind of regroup, you know, try to catch their breath, guys get a little healed up before another week. And then Kirby said, you know, the first few days of this week are going to be turned to other opponents, not Clemson. And he didn't say specifically, but I would imagine a team that they're going to look at is Tennessee because of how different that offense is and how you have to adjust to playing them. And then I think probably by Thursday, Georgia's going to turn the focus completely to Clemson, getting ready for next week. I talked to Dominic Lovett, one of the receivers, on Wednesday. And, I posted on social media him talking about that he didn't really know a ton about Clemson yet. And I think some Georgia fans jumped on that and was like, we're not really worried about Clemson. They take it really seriously. You know, they go in and they understand going into an actual game week, you only have so much time to prepare for an opponent. I think that Georgia's got a plan as far as getting into that in the next few days. And I'm sure that there's been talk through this offseason about what they're getting ready to go against. But they're going to turn it up a level probably by Thursday and then turn the total focus on Clemson going in into, you know, I guess 8-9 days before this game is played.
He joins us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Got him for just a few more minutes. And look, the luxury that we have now in the era of SEC basketball is we can talk about it even though college football starts in 10 days. And that's because the SEC schedules were released yesterday. We know everybody, who they're playing, where they're playing, and when they're playing. And Jordan, can you give us a breakdown and your thoughts on the Georgia basketball schedule coming up for 2024 and 2025?
Definitely. And Georgia drew some pretty interesting matchups when it comes to some of the Saturday home games they're going to get. Oklahoma, Auburn, not a shock to see that. Seeing Mississippi State as well, Missouri and Florida, those are some going to be some marquee Saturday home games. But you look at this thing on the whole, Jacob, Georgia is going to have to do a lot just to tread water when SEC play starts. They open at Ole Miss, and then you've got Kentucky in Athens, Oklahoma in Athens, at Tennessee, hosting Auburn, at Arkansas, at Florida. That's all in a row, and some of us were talking. Wow. I mean, if Georgia wins two of those games, that is quite an accomplishment. So it's going to be a test right out the gates. I don't think that Mike White got any favors from the SEC scheduling. You really got to take advantage of that game with Oklahoma in Stegman, and obviously that's not going to be easy. So, you know, Georgia feels good about this upcoming team and feels like it's taking a step forward. But I've talked about this quite a bit, especially when you consider Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference. Is Georgia going to be able to improve their record in conference play and probably overall as well? it's going to be quite a challenge. And I know that's how we're always going to measure how good these teams are and if they took a step forward from 1 year to the next. That's going to be a very difficult challenge for Mike White and company. And again, the way they start SEC play may go a long way in determining just how successful this season is.
Can you remind me and our listeners what Georgia was in SEC play, the record-wise, last year? Do you remember that off the top of your head?
I sure don't. I want to say it might have been 6-12, but okay. I don't have it right in front of me. It was one of those where they had a really rough streak in February where they dropped several in a row and wound up, you know, getting things back on track toward the end and then had a great NIT run. But it was definitely short of what they wanted to accomplish. And it's definitely something they want to try to turn around in Mike White's third year.
Yeah, according to a quick Google search, 6-12 is correct. So it's almost like you cover this team, you know, for a living or something, Jordan. And you didn't even mention the games where Georgia goes to Alabama, return trip to Auburn, and to Austin, Texas to take on the Longhorns. So that schedule is brutal, man. That's not easy at all.
No, and then you consider playing Marquette, playing St. John's, playing a Grand Canyon team that just came off an NCAA tournament run, and then hosting a Notre Dame team that I think will be better in Shrewsbury's second year. So it is not going to be easy, but I'll give Mike White and his staff credit. They're wanting to challenge these guys, and there's going to be no shortage of challenges this season, I can promise you that.
Auburn will go to Georgia Saturday, January 18th. Georgia will make the return trip back to the Plains on Saturday, February 22nd. So looking forward to both of those games on the hardwood. And, of course, football gets going for Georgia in just 10 days against Clemson. He writes for Dogs247. You can catch his daily work over there at Dogs247.com. Jordan, please plug and promote everything you've got going on and what you got coming up.
Definitely, Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. And, yeah, I mean, it's kind of the final countdown, you know, just 10 days until the start of the season. A lot of content, just getting through what's left of preseason camp. Next week we'll turn our focus totally to this Georgia-Clemson matchup. Looking forward to doing a lot of stuff, and not only on our side, but in conjunction with Clemson 24/7, our buddies over there that cover the Tigers. So looking forward to it. It's going to be a whirlwind, as it always is during football season, but it's going to be a fun time, and hope folks listening are able to follow the content and get ready to have a very entertaining 2024 season.
Jordan, I greatly appreciate your time, my man. Take it easy. Have a great weekend. Great rest of your week. Great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. I appreciate it, Jacob.
Thanks so much. That's Jordan Hill of Dogs247. Go check him out, Dogs247.com. We'll wrap up hour number one and get into hour number two, all coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs247 being with us on the phone lines in the last segment. And we went long. I mean, Jordan, we always have a lot of fun and have great content, but just so much to talk about with Georgia right now and all SEC programs. And, man, I can't get over their basketball schedule. I looked at it this morning when doing some show prep, but I just didn't realize how brutal this is until Jordan kind of laid it out for us. At Ole Miss to open the season, which Ole Miss isn't great, but you open up on the road, which is never fun. Then Kentucky comes to Athens week in game two. Oklahoma comes to Athens game three. They go to Knoxville, welcome in Auburn to Athens, to Arkansas, and to Florida. What? That's insane. That's insane. And then two games later, they go to Tuscaloosa. I'm with Jordan. You win two of those games from Ole Miss all the way down to Florida. How many games is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You go 2-5 in that stretch if you're Georgia, and you are probably feeling pretty good. I would think you'd try to win the Oklahoma game at home, and, oh goodness, the Ole Miss game on the road to open the season? Like, they're not going to beat Kentucky. They're not going to beat Tennessee on the road. Auburn should beat Georgia in Athens. You're not going to go to Arkansas and probably not go to Florida and win. So, yeah. And then, like I told him, they still have to go to Alabama, to Texas A&M, to Auburn, to Texas. Sheesh. For a Georgia team that could be good this year and a coach that is really good in Mike White, that schedule does not do them any justice. And that just shows how hard it really is right now to be a good SEC basketball team, to be a competitive SEC basketball team, to be a program that's trying to climb out of a hole. See, I think luckily for Auburn, when Bruce Pearl showed up, the SEC was not this. The SEC, when Bruce Pearl got here a decade ago, is not the SEC that you see today. Which is why it's hard for the Georgias and the South Carolinas to climb out of the basement and be competitive in this conference again. Doesn't mean it can't be done, and I have a feeling most of you don't feel sorry for them, but I'm just putting it in a little perspective for you. All right, that's it. We're done in hour number one. Stick around. Hour number two, Daryl Dapritz, Double D, will join us at about 3:15. So you've still got a little bit of time if you want to get in on the conversation. Want to talk some NFL news that impacts a former Auburn player. We'll lead off hour number two with that. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is. Ann Holtzman at the back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and listen to the show posted as a podcast each and every day on our station website, which is ESPNAU.com. We had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 join us in hour number one. Talked all things Georgia athletics, Georgia football, wrapping up fall camp, injury updates, positions that maybe improved the most since the spring and since fall camp started. And also a little basketball conversation with Jordan as well, looking at what could possibly be one of the most difficult schedules in the SEC this season for college basketball. So had that for you in hour number one. Also, I gave my thoughts, didn't fully get into that, and we may bring this up with Double D coming up in a little bit, but talked about the Mike Gundy stuff. Just more quotes, more head-scratching, questionable decisions by the Oklahoma State head football coach, and got into that. Had a couple of phone calls about that as well. So had a lot of fun in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can go and listen to the podcast at ESPNAU.com. Speaking of Double D, he's going to join us coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes, give or take. And so make sure you are sticking around for that. Daryl Dapritz from Locked On Auburn, Auburn Daily, Montgomery radio legend, will be with us as he is every Wednesday for 30 minutes. We'll recap Auburn fall practice, some position battles there, also some recruiting nuggets, and talk Auburn basketball and the SEC schedule. So tons to get to with Double D coming up in just a few minutes. But until he's with us, you can be with us if you'd like on the phone lines at 334-321-1390. That's 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot me a quick comment or question in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. Again, 334-784-1067. Before we get into content, Want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day here during On the Line. Well, some news out of the NFL today, ladies and gentlemen, that some of you may find very interesting, and some of you may know, and some of you may not. And there were some who saw the headline and had to look it up just to make sure that it was legit. The Denver Broncos have named their starting quarterback. And do you happen to know who QB1 now is in Denver, Colorado? His name is only five letters long. He's a guy that's played all over the country in college football. And he started as a freshman right here on the Plains. You guessed it, Bo Nix is the new starting quarterback in Denver and will be the week one starter for Sean Payton and the Broncos. How about that? And I bring this up not to rub it in anybody's face, not to bring up bad feelings if you have them about the guy, and not to bring up sore spots during his career here, which was very up and down. But I'm genuinely happy for the guy. I am. I'm genuinely happy for Bo Nix getting this opportunity, because let me pose a, not a hypothetical, but a question that I think we could all answer truthfully, and hopefully you would answer this truthfully to yourself. When Bo Nix was at Auburn, or when he left Auburn, or when he started at Auburn, choose whatever timeline you want that includes Auburn. Would you have expected him to get drafted, and in that timeline, him be named a starter in the NFL? I don't care that it's for the Denver Broncos, who are terrible. I don't care. Would you have predicted that Bo Nix, during his time at Auburn, would have been named a starting quarterback in the NFL? I'll give you my answer. I didn't think so. I didn't think that's where he was headed. No shot. With how his career started here and how it went the entire time, the fact that this guy had to play for a new offensive coordinator every year that he was here. I want you to think about that for a second. A quarterback in college football had to play with a brand new offensive coordinator every year he was at a certain program. That's messed up. That's not right. But then he transferred right out to Oregon. His time here was done. It was a mutual agreement, I think, which is sad because he grew up wanting to play at Auburn, and eventually he made that happen. But he goes out to Oregon and he balls out, lights it up. Sits in New York City for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. Then gets drafted, and here we are. He's now named the starting quarterback in Denver. Good for you, Bo Nix. Good for you. You were in a system at Auburn in one of the... You were in here at some of the darkest times in the history of this program, and it was not your fault. Were you perfect? No. Not by any means. But Bo Nix did some special things here. Whether you like the guy or not, that's not my concern here. That's not my concern at all. Bo Nix did historical things at Auburn. He beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl as a freshman. He gave Auburn football their first win in Death Valley since the 90s. Those two things in general should make you respect the guy and should make you want to cheer for him. I said this when he went to Oregon, I wanted him to do well, that I thought he could be a Heisman contender out there. And guess what? He was. And now he's going to play in the NFL. And for those of you that are NFL people that have watched the National Football League for a long time, like myself, you understand that him playing for Sean Payton is awesome. It is fantastic for him and his career. Because Sean Payton has done magical things with quarterbacks like him. Smart, undersized quarterbacks. Do you know who the Hall of Famer quarterback that he coached forever was? Yeah, it was Drew Brees in New Orleans. Who is a Hall of Famer or going to be a Hall of Famer? He's one of the best quarterbacks that's ever played the game. And look at him compared to Bo Nix. They have the same physical build. I think they both have a very high IQ. And Drew Brees became one of the all-time greats under Sean Payton. Am I saying Bo Nix is a Hall of Famer going to be? I don't know. But I'm saying he's in a really good situation. And I'm happy for the guy. I am. And I think it's cool. I think it's unique. Because whether he claims Auburn or not, or whether Auburn claims him or not, that conversation always comes up, especially now more than ever in the transfer portal era, right? Does Alabama or Oklahoma claim Jalen Hurts? That type of thing. Kyler Murray, whatever, right? I mean, those guys that have transferred a couple of times and gone on to do great things. But the fact of the matter is, Bo Nix is a starting quarterback in the NFL. Would you ever have guessed it? I wouldn't. Not during his time here. And again, I have a lot of respect for him because he was here during the worst head coach in the history of this program. He was here in the darkest days I've ever seen on the Plains. And yet, he still loved Auburn. He fought for Auburn. He played for Auburn. And when he left, he had nothing but good things to say. He still comes back here. He's been seen at basketball games, at baseball games. He's been back on the Plains. He's from this state. And I think that speaks volumes, man. I really, really do. So, look, how good is he going to be this season? Couldn't tell you. How good are the Denver Broncos going to be? Probably not very. But I just think it's really neat, man. And what's crazy is the fans out in Denver, because I've seen them on social media quite a bit, they've been begging for this, begging for Denver to name Bo Nix the starter, like for weeks now. And today, they finally did it. You look up Denver's schedule this season, they doesn't get easy for Bo. They open up week one on the road in Seattle, one of the toughest places to play in the NFL. They have Pittsburgh week two, at Tampa week three, at the Jets week four. What is this? The schedule's terrible. At New York Jets, home versus the Raiders, then the Chargers. They're going to play at the Saints. They've got the Panthers. The Chiefs are in there. The Browns are in there. The Bengals are in there. The Chiefs are in there again. Like, look, I don't know. They're predicting the Broncos to win like four games or something this year, but I just thought it was important to talk about Bo Nix being named the starter in Denver. Good for you, my man. Good for you, Bo Nix. Go do great things out in Denver in the National Football League. All right, let's take our first break here in hour number two. We'll go ahead and get to this because we got to get Double D on the phone. Daryl Dapprich from Locked On Auburn, Auburn Daily, and Montgomery radio legend. He joins us when we come back for what is a lot of your favorite segment of the week. We're talking Auburn basketball, Auburn football, Auburn recruiting across both sports, and so much more. Double D joins us when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It's Wednesday in hour number two, and you know what that means. It's time for Double D. Daryl Dapprich joining us on the phone lines. My man, Double D, how are you on this Wednesday?
Good, man. How are you doing,
brother? I'm doing fantastic. Yeah. Hanging in there is a great way to put that with with high school football getting going in just a couple of days and the university not too far behind. It's a busy time here on the Plains.
Yeah, it is. You know, what's great about this time of year, you know, you've got high school football, you got college football, and then you wait like a month and a half, and anybody that's a sports fan, then you've got baseball playoffs start to kick in.
Yeah.
Basketball's right around the corner. I think there is, if I'm not mistaken, 1 week in the year, in the calendar year, where the World Series, college football, college basketball and the NHL is all going on at the same time.
Man, I love it. And then you get
first
those random.
November. Yeah. And, I mean, it used to not be that way. I'm a traditionalist. I like the World Series being over in October, but that's not the case anymore. But still, you know, it's one of those situations where if you're a sports fan, that's like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first week of November, mark it down. That's the best time to be alive.
And you get some of those days where all of them are playing on the same day, right? The sports equinoxes, which are
right.
just incredible, right?
I mean, and it's cool outside.
Yeah.
You step outside and there's a chill in the air. It's a brick. I mean, I'm a fall guy.
Me
too. And I've always have. I like leaves and I like changing and I like the, you know, cool air. So the first week of November. Oh, and it's also my anniversary. I can't believe I didn't even mention that. You know, my wedding anniversary. I'll be married 30 years this one.
Wow.
So,
good for you.
Yeah. I was married at 10. So it's one of those things where it's just a great time. That's just a great time of year. But you can't get there without it all starting up in the next couple of weeks. So there you go.
That's right. Well, with football starting up in just 10 days for Auburn University, I want to start with you. And we typically do this when there's news for basketball and football. We'll start basketball, get into football. And that's what we're going to do here today. We'll start with the Maui Invitational because we know who Auburn starts with in their non-conference early season tournament. And then we know who they could possibly be playing in that tournament as well. Enlighten us on what you know and what you think so far.
Well, we talked about how when the matchups were going to be released, it didn't matter who Auburn was going to play. The field was so strong. Now, Auburn had a chance to open with a Dayton or a Memphis, maybe somebody that wasn't ranked in the way too early preseason top 25, or there was always the option to open with a UConn, Iowa State, North Carolina, Michigan State. So Auburn draws Iowa State, who in some of those polls is ranked as high as seventh. And those early preseason ESPN polls. So there you go. Another really, really good opponent that Auburn's going to play. You expect to play that in a Maui Invitational. And then if you win that, you play North Carolina or Dayton. Well, you know, the school of thought is it'll be North Carolina. And if it's Dayton, Auburn catches a break. But people don't understand that if it's Dayton, that means they beat North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So with Anthony Grant as being the head coach. And so, yeah, it's. I was looking at their non-conference schedule, and of course, they haven't released the other games, the ones that are kind of like breathers, you know. They haven't released those where they play smaller schools, but it's still just amazing to me that Auburn is going to have this kind of non-conference schedule and have to play these types of schools, and that's where patience with the Auburn fan base is really going to have to be, because you could come out of this from the Houston game November 9th all the way till the Purdue game on December 21st, if you came out of that 500, I would feel good about Auburn's chances. I mean, I really would. You split those. I say 500 of the big-time opponents.
Sure.
Like I said, there's going to be some sprinkled in there that you should win, that you should be 3 or 4 or 5 games over 500 heading into SEC play. But if you just split the big dogs, the Purdues, the Houstons, the Dukes, the Ohio States, the Maui Invitational, you just split those games and take care of business in the lesser than and go into conference play, you know, 9-5, something like that. I mean, you take that all day long because you'll be ranked. Auburn will be ranked. There's no doubt if you split the really tough part of their schedule and then take care, win 4 or 5 of the cupcakes, going into conference play, Auburn will be ranked.
Well, what I like about this is Auburn is hitting all of the major conferences. You're hitting the Big 12. You're hitting the ACC at least once with Duke and probably again with North Carolina. You're hitting the Big 10 with Ohio State and Purdue. I mean, you're catching them all, Darryl. And if you end up playing UConn, you'll hit the Big East too, which you know that. That's a major conference
Ooh.
In basketball. I mean, you're hitting all the big dogs.
Yeah, I mean, the Big East doesn't get the recognition that it should.
Agreed.
It's a very, very good basketball conference with, you know, Villanova, UConn. I think Creighton is in there.
Creighton's
They've always
in there,
been
yeah.
good. Providence yeah. is starting to pick up and have good programs. I mean, it's not the Big East that I grew up with, I mean, it could actually in some aspects be, but, well, I say that. The Big East that I grew up with was deeper with the Georgetowns and the St. John's and the Syracuse and those type of schools. But, sure. You know, it's just, it's one of those situations where it's a very, very good conference. It's an elite basketball conference. It usually sends four or five teams to the tournament every year, and they usually go deep. They usually go deep into the tournament. They usually have some tournament success. So, yeah, Auburn's hitting on everybody but the Pac-2, and they're not playing Oregon State or Washington State. So they've pretty much got it all covered except, you know, wherever those two schools are going to play at. Very interesting schedule. It will be interesting to see now the fill-in games. You know, do they go and play Alabama State again? Do they play, you know, some of these other I think there's some Southern Conference schools and some other like that they always play. So we'll see. It'll be really fun. Even like we talked about last week, you know, Florida Atlantic in an exhibition game. They will be tested. They'll be tested early, and I think they'll be ready to play this really interesting SEC schedule.
Yeah, I'm good if Auburn wants to sprinkle in, and no offense to these teams and programs, but yeah, South Alabama in there and an Alabama State and whoever, you know, whoever they can get in there just to give themselves a few almost guaranteed wins. I'm not going to say fully gimme wins because that's not how college basketball works anymore, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to App State, but I dang sure would call them and have them come to Auburn.
Yeah, I think they learned their lesson on that, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some Sun Belts and some Southern Conference and something like that. But, yeah, I mean, that was a very, very aggressive, bold move to go to Boone and play that game. I think Auburn still wins that game 9 out of 10. They just caught Auburn at the right time on a Sunday morning. But I would schedule App State and get them in Neville Arena. That would be interesting to get them back.
Well, then, outside of the non-conference schedule, the news we got about that with the Maui Invitational, we now know what the conference schedule looks like in the SEC, and Auburn doesn't get a whole lot of breaks, Darryl. There are some really, really fascinating matchups on the road and at home for Auburn inside of Neville Arena.
Well, first things first, I think it's good. It's the elephant in the room. It's the obvious take. Finally, the Auburn-Alabama games are on Saturdays. I got so tired of it being on a Wednesday night or a Tuesday night. Auburn-Alabama will play both of their games on a Saturday, which is, you know, the prime time to play it. And then I love the fact that just like in the Iron Bowl, you know, the Alabama game in Neville Arena is the last game of the year on March 8th.
Yep.
So, I mean, you've got to go to Texas A&M and to Kentucky on the road before you get that game. Although there is a nice little stretch where Auburn has three home games in a row versus Arkansas, Georgia, and Ole Miss. So it's a tough schedule when you add two schools. Gets Oklahoma at home with the new member of the conference, just like they do in football, but they go at Texas. For anybody that's an Auburn basketball aficionado and loves to follow the Tigers on the road, that'll be a fun place to go in Austin if you want to go check out Texas, and that actually is the second game of the SEC schedule for Auburn. So interesting dynamics there and interesting games. I think that one is one that I've got earmarked, the at Texas game. I think versus Tennessee at home, mm-hmm. Auburn getting Tennessee at home is interesting. That'll be a fun game. Like we said, Oklahoma at home. And then, of course, Auburn has to go to Vanderbilt, which up until last year was the House of Horrors playing in Memorial Gymnasium, but I think they kind of got that one. Don't go to Arkansas this year, which is interesting.
Right, you get them at home, yep.
They get them at home. Obviously Georgia and Alabama are the two schools that they play twice, and Ole Miss, too. They play Ole Miss twice. At Kentucky, it'll be interesting with Mark Pope being the coach, not Calipari. So, yeah, fun schedule. I like the conference schedule. And I like the way it sets up for Auburn. I really do. I really think that it's beneficial. It does it some justice with the home in ways and all that kind of stuff and who they play. So it will be a fun basketball season for sure.
Yesterday on the show when we were talking about this SEC schedule, Darryl, we broke it up in segments of four. And I feel like that's how you have to do it with how it sets up, right? You start with home versus Missouri, at Texas, at South Carolina, home for Mississippi State. It's like, okay, let's go, you know, let's go 3-1 in that stretch. And then you look at the next four of at Georgia, home for Tennessee, at LSU, at Ole Miss. I mean, that's a tough stretch where three out of four games are on the road. And then you come home for a couple of games against OU and Florida before you take a couple more road trips, including Tuscaloosa. I mean, I just feel that that's the best way to do it. And the last four games on your schedule, home versus Ole Miss, at Kentucky, at A&M, and home for Alabama. That may be the toughest stretch of the entire season.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do the quick math in my head as how many SEC games Auburn plays. It used to be 18, right? And I think it's still 18, even though they've got two new members of the conference. I'm just
it is 18. Yep, they still play 18.
So, I mean, I'm just going to say this. You go 11-7 in the SEC after winning maybe 10 games non-conference with that kind of schedule, and you're 21-10 with Auburn's schedule, people will look at that and go, no, that's top five in the KenPom with that schedule. So, I you know, 11-7, 12-6 in the SEC is nothing to shake a stick at when you look at this schedule. Now, obviously, Auburn would want to go 14-4, try to win a conference title, and I get that. It's going to be interesting to see if the non-conference schedule helps them with this SEC schedule or if it's so rugged and so tough that it beats them down by the time they get to the SEC schedule. So it may be one of those things that they're like, after the schedule we just played, this is doable at, 15-3, 14-4. Who knows? But it could be, like I said, one of those things that you could feel really, really beat down playing those emotional, tough opponents like Auburn could be doing in the non-conference.
Well, if they, in something that we brought up yesterday as well, if they do have any sort of hangover coming out of the non-conference schedule, you don't have long to be hungover with the second game at Texas and then at South Carolina. Like, you've got to get up and get ready to go, and you have no time to be droggy or to be hung back from a non-conference schedule that is by far the toughest in the entire country. We're excited for basketball season, but football season's a little bit closer. That's what we're talking about coming up next with Darryl Dapritz. We'll recap fall practice, talk about recruiting, and get you ready for week zero and week one of Auburn starting next week. All that coming up after this here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back, which is a big reason why we have this guy join us each and every Wednesday. Darryl Dapritz from Locked On Auburn and Auburn Daily continuing to be on with us on the phone lines. Darryl, tell the people where they can find you other than right here on Wednesday afternoons.
Well, on Monday mornings at 7:10 with our good friend Ben Taylor, WANI, starting last Monday, every Monday at 8 a.m., WNSP Automobile. I'm on a show called The Opening Kickoff there with you, obviously, on Wednesday afternoons, 3:15, Locked On Auburn, Wednesdays and Fridays. And then when the football season starts, there'll be a Sunday morning show that drops at 7 a.m. It's a reaction show to what we do, whatever the football game, we typically record that on Saturday night. So a lot of fire. And then every other Friday, back on with your friend, your man there, Doug Amos.
Good.
Ticket on okay. Friday, every other Friday afternoon about 11:40, now that the season's getting started. So it'll be kind of a bi-weekly thing there as well on the Max Roundtable.
Well, do you have like a sticky note or a spreadsheet or something that you write all that down? I mean, how in the world do you keep up with all that?
I posted it on social media so I can keep going back and referring to it.
And that way people can, they can keep track of it too and keep making sure you're hitting all your different appearances across the state. And so, look, man, we always appreciate you and your time, and it's so much fun having you on this show for 30 minutes each and every week. And so as we continue with this week's conversation, we flip back over to football, because Auburn kicks off in 10 days, Daryl. 10 days from now, they'll be kicking off under the lights in Jordan-Hare Stadium in the season opener against Alabama A&M. And fall practice has come and gone. Fall camp is over. They're preparing for game week next week. What did you learn from fall camp for Auburn football this season?
I learned a couple things. First of all, the obvious one is that Peyton Thorne has shown marked improvement. I think that he's a lot more confident. I think the coaching staff is a lot more confident in him leading the team. I think that there's some definite good feelings and confident feelings about his ability to lead this football team. So I think that's something different than going, you know, coming out of the spring. I think Auburn's edge rushers are elite. They go four deep with McLeod, Falk, Keyron Crawford, and then Amaris Williams, the freshman, has been, they've been getting raves about him. Riddick, the freshman linebacker, has beginning a lot of, you know, living up to the hype. So I think that was a big question mark. Could Auburn get a pass rush? And I think I've heard, you know, nothing but good things about the edge rushers. And then the third thing is a little bit of a question mark. And that is, I felt going into fall camp that Auburn was going to really, really have the offensive line solidified, that the only thing that they were going to be worried about or questioning or you know, that they would have to answer would be depth, the two deep. You know, you're hearing some things now that the Auburn offensive line is struggling a little bit with communication, struggling a little bit with blocking these elite edges that are coming off the corner, that maybe the tackle – so thinking that the tackle problem was solved in the offseason of the portal may not be. You heard Hugh Freeze talk about flip-flopping Dylan Wade and Percy Lewis, which is very concerning to me on two fronts. Number one, I thought Percy Lewis was that guy, and he still may be. This could just be a wake-up call, could be trying to send a message. But you went out, you got Percy Lewis in the portal through Mississippi State to be your starting left tackle, period. And he's a guy that rated really, really high on PFFs. And now you're talking about moving him to the guard position. Well, that's concerning because you thought you had your staple at left tackle. And then I'm one of these guys that it's concerning to me that you put a 6'7 guy inside in the passing lanes. Now, I heard some others, we talked about this on Locked On Auburn, and someone said, well, Braden Smith was 6'7 and he played guard at Auburn. He was actually 6'6 and he got moved to offensive tackle when he got to the NFL. So I don't know if I like a big mammoth guy like that in your throwing lanes. The offensive line is the thing that I've taken out of that the most. I don't even want to say negative. I just want to say different, because I thought that was an absolute slam dunk for stability and continuity, and now there seems to be some question marks.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I mean, throughout the summer, that was one of the, and I mentioned it in this exact tone of, I'm not really concerned about the offensive line, and there's depth there, and there seems to be experience and confidence and things like that. And man, within a week's time, that got flipped on its head because of what Hugh Freeze told us in the media.
You know, it could be, look, we used to praise Nick Saban all the time for saying things in the media that he wasn't intending for the media to understand, but to send a message to his football team.
Sure.
And this could be one of those examples, right? It could be moving him for a week inside to get his attention, to get him to work on his footwork. But look, this is going to sound like an excuse. I'm just throwing this out there. I'm relaying something I heard, and people in your listening audience can make their own, draw their own conclusion.
Here we go.
I saw where a Mississippi State coach last year said that Lewis kind of struggled early on in the season and then came on incredibly strong as the season wore on and as the weather got cooler. That sounds like such a lame excuse. Like, you know, Daryl's saying that he's struggling because of the weather. When you're a big guy like that, it could be a conditioning thing, right? It could be that you struggle in certain situations. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just telling you what I heard from the Mississippi State standpoint is that this is a guy that got better as the season wore on. And it was, and you know, was it experience? Was it reps? It felt like he really did a lot better. And you think about the spring. When he was here in the spring, people were raving about him as a second-round pick, the Senior Bowl. We were out there at SEC Media Days. Jacob, Jim Nagy was talking about how he couldn't wait to get him.
Yeah.
As a Senior Bowl, well, when is that? When was that? That was in the spring. What was the weather like in the spring? So I don't know if there's something to that or not. Just fun to throw out different, you know, plausible, you know, facts or solutions or causes, and maybe that's one. But I would fully expect when Auburn kicks it off a week from Saturday against Alabama A&M, I would be shocked if Percy Lewis wasn't the starting left tackle.
Hmm. Okay. I see where you're going, and I think a lot of people could get behind that. And what's funny, or I guess what we all just have to accept here is we'll have to wait and see. We're going to find out. We'll find out in 10 days. And I also believe that with the schedule that Auburn has, with what should be 3 to 4 winnable games to start the season, that does give this coaching staff a little bit of flexibility if they decide to move some guys around, Darryl, and maybe experiment a little bit.
Well, that's the key. You know, I always said when Auburn got Lewis that moving way to guard strengthened two positions. It strengthened the left tackle, and it strengthened the guard by way moving. Well, I mean, that you don't get that case now. If Wade stays at guard and you start Tyler Johnston out there, if he's ready, or if Wade moves out to tackle and Lewis struggles at guard and you slide in a Muskrat or a Tate Johnson, then I don't know. I mean, I trust the coaching staff. I just felt like all along the best five and the five that would give you the strongest offensive line was Lewis, Wade, Lou, Wright, Miller. That was what, you know, and it sounds like the right side with Wright and Xavion Miller and with Lou as the center are set. It's the left side, tackle, guard. So flexibility is nice, but I wanted to have flexibility as backups. Flexibility is in the two deep. Flexibility for depth when the game's out of hand and you can pull people off the field and put in a whole new five offensive lineman, or if there's an injury, you plug and play.
Right.
I don't know. Auburn has been recruiting under Hugh Freeze a lot of hybrid offensive linemen, guys that can play tackle and guard. DeAndre Carter's an example, the freshman. You know, obviously Dylan Wade's an example. I mean, they have this Ronan Chambers guy that came as a transfer. He's an example of someone that could play both. I think Muskrat at one point played both at Tulsa. So they like these hybrid kids that can play guard and tackle, and I love that too. But I think at some point it's nice to go after 4- and 5-star guys that do nothing but play tackle, especially your left side where it's protecting Mr. Thorne's blind side. You know, we'll see. I still think, you know, we've got their plan. This is game week. They're going ahead and planning, and we'll see. No one gets peekaboos at practice anymore, so we're going to have a hard time telling – what the lineup's going to be. But, you know, while you're eating your little rye breads up in the press box, I'll be shocked if Percy Lewis isn't running out there as the starter.
Well, maybe we'll put a bag of Chex Mix on it or something to just see. We'll start taking wagers.
I can't go full Chex Mix, dude. Only the bag of little rye bread. Chex Mix stuff, no.
Oh, come on. The pretzels and the pretzel sticks.
Those pretzels and those little square...
Yeah.
Chex Mix things. No, that is so lame. I can't even eat those things. That was in my cereal with milk, but if I want pretzels, I'm going to get a soft pretzel. I need that little weenie pretzel that's, you know, real small. No. No. Rye bread all the way, baby, and then you got to wash it down with some Mike and Ike's and let's go.
Oh, man.
Get ready for football season.
Oh, I can't wait. We'll be together in the press box in 10 days, my man, and I can't wait. If you don't have a full backpack full of snacks, I'm going to be really disappointed in you.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to up my snack game this year. Last year, I literally had some good stuff in my backpack for the New Mexico State tank game, and I never took it out. I was so nauseous and so upset with the way that game was playing out, I never took it out of my bag at all. I waited till I got home. So, yeah, I don't want that to repeat itself.
Well, we got to be prepared. We have five straight home games we got to cover, Daryl.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, we could even stash stuff up there and go get to it later, pigeonhole it, get it when we get up there. But, yeah, five in a row is going to just be unbelievable. I mean, I don't know the last time I went to five Auburn home games, period. I mean, I only went to a few last year, covered a few in the non-conference. This year, hopefully it'll be different. But, yeah, that's going to be a very nice run to start the season. And then you miss the whole month of October, and you come back, and it's cold. It's going to be kind of weird, right? When you cover that first game, like I talked about earlier, you'll go from sweating and it being in the 90s in September to coming back in a little sweatshirt weather action. It's all good.
Yeah, well, we'll have all that coming up in just about 10 days, five straight home games for Auburn. You mentioned the month of October being completely on the road and with a bye week in there as well. And then, what, Vanderbilt and you have a
– La Monroe,
that's it. Yeah, and then Texas A&M before you go on the road for the Iron Bowl. Daryl, before I let you get out of here, there has been a couple of recruiting notes that I want to get your quick thoughts on. The one that a lot of people have been talking about is the news of Deuce Knight, the quarterback in 2025, who is supposed to be on campus August 31st, which, of course, is next week for game one for Auburn football against Alabama A&M.
Lines up very inconspicuously to what we've been hearing all along to when he might recruit. I mean, commit. I mean, literally people were starting to panic, and I heard, you know, a couple weeks ago that it would be before the season started at some point, and now this is like connecting the dots. He's going to be here with his family, you know, Saturday, game day, Alabama A&M. What a better time, or even the night before, to commit to Auburn. And I think once that happens, I'm hearing really good things on Naheem Offord, that could be a really, really legitimate flip candidate from Ohio State, not pie in the sky, that could happen when Deuce commits. Babaola, the offensive tackle, keep an eye on Chroma, has come back. Uzman Chroma's name has come back in, who's once a Florida State lean. I think there's some smoke there. So I think you'll see the dominoes start to fall, but I think the first one will be Deuce Knight, and I'm a lot more confident on Offord than I was maybe a month ago as being a potential flip from Ohio State as well.
And don't forget that Naheem Offord is the number one player in the state of Alabama, the corner who, as you mentioned, is committed to Ohio State. If that were to happen, Daryl, that would be 9 of the top 10 players from the state all committed to the Orange and Blue.
And you'd probably end up with a top 4 class. I mean, if you just got Knight, Chroma, and Offord, and we don't know about Malachi Goodman or Babs or whatever, you know, you still got Tyler Lockhart that's supposed to pop too at any given time, the linebacker from Winona, Mississippi, and then Sam Turner, the Georgia Tech receiver commit. I think that there's some back channeling going on there, that if Deuce Knight commits, is there a bigger fish out there from a wide receiver position that could jump on board that Auburn might be waiting on? There's a lot of puzzle pieces in place there. So at the end of the day, I think it's very realistic, without being overly, you know, just overly unrealistic, that Auburn will end up with a top 5 recruiting class. And I would predict, if someone said, where do you think they're going to end up? My prediction would be number 4. Auburn will be the 4th rated class in the country when it's all said. There's 6 right now.
Yeah.
So you get 4 more guys. One, that Deuce Knight is a 5-star. Offord is a 5-star. Lockhart and Uzman Chroma. Yeah, you could get up to 3, actually, with that. 3 or 2.
And I think Auburn fans would be ecstatic about it. And that's exactly where Hugh Freeze wanted to be. He did what he wanted in 24. He's doing what he wants in 25. And we know there's a lot of news brewing and coming down the road for the class of 2026 as well. Daryl Daprich, you can find him locked on Auburn. Auburn Daily with me on Wednesdays across the state, across the country. He may be even on radio shows in Ireland if you're not careful, if he doesn't slow down.
I would love to get out with Italy and talk with some of my relatives, kind of, you know.
You'd blow their mind talking college football.
We could talk college football. We could talk soccer. We could talk it all. We could talk, you know, riding in the trunk of a Cadillac. There's a lot of things we could talk about. with some Italian brethren. Yeah, I'd love to get on a show in Italy.
I love it. Well, the way you are just growing and hitting on every single outlet, I'm sure it won't be long before you start getting calls from Italy or Paris or Japan or whatever. they're gonna have your crazy self come on there and start talking all things college football. My man, it's always a pleasure. You're a fan favorite around here, great friend of mine, and I cannot wait to have you on the show next Wednesday, but then see you in person next Saturday inside Jordan-Hare.
Man, I'm looking forward to it. It's getting close. We can smell it. So thanks for having me. Have a great call Friday night.
Thank you, sir.
With Auburn High. Have a great first game. Very proud that you're doing that. So go get them, brother.
Thank you very much, man. Have a great week and the rest of all your right. weekend, and we will have you on next week as well. That is Darryl Dapperich. Go find him. Locked on Auburn. Auburn Daily. Get him on social media as well. One of the best dudes that you're ever going to meet in the world. Not just in sports, not just in radio, not just in whatever. The one of the best guys that you're ever going to meet. Darryl Dapperich joins us every Wednesday from 3:15 to 3:45, but we typically go a little long. So we appreciate him and his time. I appreciate his friendship, and we'll have him on yet again next week and all football season, basketball season, baseball season, and summer long. Darryl Dapperich is with us here on ESPN. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thank you so much to all of you for tuning in here once again between 2 and 4 each and every day on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Shout out to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 who joined us in hour number one, and Darryl Dapperich who just got off the phone with us from Locked on Auburn, Auburn Daily, and a bunch of different places as well. Both of those guys do such a good job at what they do, and we appreciate their time each and every Wednesday. If you missed any of the show today, you can go and listen to the show as a podcast. We just posted on our website, ESPNAU.com. You can go and check that out in each and every day, past shows, today's show, whatever you need to do. You can find that at ESPNAU.com. Also, be sure you have our new Radio Alabama app downloaded. That's our sister station, our sister company up in Sylacauga. We've taken all of our stations and put them into one friendly place for you. So be sure you've got the Radio Alabama app downloaded. That way you can listen to all of our sports shows live each and every day. You can catch all of our music stations there, our news talk station on WANI. And the other reason why I'm highlighting this even more is because that's where you can listen to our high school football coverage as well, which gets going Friday night, two nights from now, which, whew, man, it still work to be done, let me tell you that. But between Auburn High School and Lee Scott, the two sports networks that we have here at Auburn Network, you can catch both of those broadcasts each Friday night this upcoming football season. So be sure you've got that. Radio Alabama, you can download that on your App Store, Google Play, wherever you got it. You go and get that. Auburn High School football, you'll have me, Rob Pate, and Jack Hutton over on Wings 94.3. Lee Scott football, you'll have Christian Griffin for game one. He will then be joined by a new color commentator in week two and beyond. So excited for what they are going to do over at Lee Scott. That is on AU100, which is 100.3 FM on your radio dial, AU100FM.com. With us, you can do Wings 94.3 or WingsFM.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Thursday, and while Thursdays are always busy, it just got even busier. Yes, we're going to have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network in Hour 1. Yes, we're going to have Chris Gordy of Locked on SEC in Hour number 2. But right there in the middle, right at 3 o'clock, as we did every week during football season a year ago, we've got head coach Keith Etheridge from Auburn High School football joining us on the phone lines 3 o'clock on Thursdays all throughout the football season, and we'll preview game one for Auburn High versus North Miami Beach. So all of that and more tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN. Shout out the Orthopedic Clinic for bringing you the second hour of today's show. They do that each and every day between 3 and 4. Check them out online at theorthoclinic.com. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe, and I'll talk to you later.